Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr., and joining me is Imran, the Don Khan.
Howdy. I'm wearing a PS I Love You shirt to protest that the horrible things Barrett has been saying about Final Fantasy VII on Twitter.
Wait, Barrett's been saying things on Twitter?
Yes.
About Final Fantasy VII Remake?
Yes.
What are the things he's been saying? Because this is... So, of course, PS I Love You XOXO is now up on podcast services around the globe and on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And on today's episode that came out this morning, me and Greg did the whole bracket, right, where he decided what's the best PS4 exclusive of all time. And Barrett was on the ones and twos. And he had some things to say, some non-favorable things to say about Final Fantasy VII Remake, along with a few other games.
Yeah. He's been taking that fight to also Twitter as well. I think... I'm not going to spoil what happens in that podcast because you just told me, but I feel like some of it was a little personal of he liked one game and didn't want to see it lose to FF7, and he has taken that anger to Twitter.
I understand. I understand. Also, I'm like, I'm very choppy right now.
Discord. You cut out. We didn't hear any of that. It was just...
Okay, am I back now?
Nice pause.
Am I good now? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
So what I was saying is I understand. Like I understand what Barrett feels, because I feel some of the same stuff, because I had some beloved matchups go up against Final Fantasy VII Remake too. But like, it's the name of the game, you know? it's me, it's Greg Miller, it's the chat. And sometimes the chat dictates certain things and we all don't agree.
Mm-hmm.
That's how things go.
That is the benefit of being a Patreon subscriber, is that you can weigh in on those things and not have to just sit on the sidelines being like, well, actually, I thought FF7 was bad. And then you don't have your opinion in the fold because you're not subscribed to Patreon.
Exactly. Well, here's the thing. Having the chat be involved actually made me feel a lot better on a lot of the decisions me and Greg were making. Because there are certain ones that we were picking where I was like, oh, I don't know how people are going to react to that. And then we'd pull the chat just as like a fun thing to see where people would lie. And more often than not, like the chat would either agree with us or it'd be closer than what we'd think. And so for some picks that I thought were controversial, ended up not being that controversial in the chat. Probably end up being controversial in the grand scheme of things once more people start listening to the episode. But I feel like for the most part, it was a pretty good, balanced episode. And honestly, kind of predictable, but still balanced, still fair. And so
I'm very excited for like some random PlayStation subreddit or like whatever, like a PlayStation exclusive subreddit, to just take that poll and be like, this is such bullshit. Why? How could they do this? This is not scientific. Because they do that all the time with every ranking of every game and anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So be prepared to get some Twitter hate messages in like 6 months.
Blessing, I say you go in there now and change the name to Scientific.
Giant Bomb gets a lot of shit for that, actually. For the ranking of fighters. Yeah.
I miss Giant Bomb, how they traditionally do Game of the Year. Because they go for it in a way that I don't know how they have the stamina and the wherewithal to like, you know, do like the top. They used to do the top three, like of a bunch of different categories for Game of the Year, and then they would culminate it in their top 10 games of the year, ordered, ranked. And it's not like it's not a vote system. It's not like we're polling from chat or whatever. It is them in a room having to unify, like have a unified agreement on what their top 10 is going to be. And every year, I very much look forward to it. They've like pared it down over the years, so now it's mainly just that top 10. But still, it's one of those things where I'm like, if I was in that room, I'd be so stressed, man.
I think, but didn't IGN, when they pick their game of the year, do a similar thing where they all like come together?
They like vote. I feel like they vote at a certain point, though, right? Like,
yeah.
Giant Bomb doesn't vote.
They are
talking things out.
Yeah, but like I think that's what IGN does too. But like at the end, isn't it a vote when they're like, okay, should God of War go before this other game? I don't know what games came out that year.
Yeah.
We voted last year, and I was like, that's fine. That leads us to a conclusion very fast. But I do miss the like debate and arguing over which game is the person who has the wherewithal to survive is the one who gets their game of the year.
Wait, so you guys voted but didn't have a giant discussion beforehand?
I mean, we talked about, not beforehand, no. And that's how, Jedi Fallen Order walked to the Game of the Year for Kind of Funny last year.
Exactly. And of course, I encourage everybody to go listen to PSW XOXO because it's a lot of debate, but it's a very fun time. And halfway through, me and Greg get drinks, and it turns into a little bit more nonsense after that. And so,
how long is
PSW XOXO now live? It's 2.5 hours.
Oh, geez.
It's a pretty long episode.
Every time. Every goddamn time.
But enough about that. Let's talk about more controversy coming out of Ubisoft. Logic signing a deal with Twitch and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, or bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, of course, the Kind of Funny XCast is up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, podcast services, and now on Spotify. That's right. We finally won. We did it. It took a weekend. It took a few days, but we're there. We're on Spotify. So if you have Spotify, go ahead and give XCast a listen there. Speaking of XCast, remember, this week is a huge Xbox week here on Kind of Funny. Tomorrow, Wednesday at 2 p.m., Greg streaming the Summer Game Fest demo event, which we'll talk about a little bit later in this episode because that's a new story. But basically, of course, a bunch of demos are coming to Xbox Live. Greg's going to be sitting down, playing through quite a few of them. And again, that's happening Wednesday at 2 p.m. right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Thursday at 9 a.m., we're reacting live to the Xbox Game Showcase alongside the host of Kind of Funny's XCast, Snowbike Mike. Of course, it's him. It's going to be Greg, Tim, me, and Andy, the five of us, reacting live to all them Halos, all them Gears, all them Forza Horizons. So tune in for that. But enough about Xbox. Again, like I said earlier, PSLW XOXO is live on podcast services around the globe. YouTube.com is Kind of Funny Games. And again, it's a 2.5 hour long ridiculous episode of PSLW where me and Greg are making our way through a bracket of 70 something games and agreeing on some things, disagreeing on a lot of things, but overall having a good time. So I recommend you go check that out. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Muhammad Muhammad and Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by Klarna, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Warp Report. Time for some news. We have five stories today.
Oh, Baker's
five
dozen.
Stories today. Kevin, I have a question for you. How's my internet? Because I'm noticing that I'm getting you guys being choppy for me a lot, and that probably means that I'm being choppy as I'm speaking. Am I fine?
No, yeah, you're fine. You were choppy earlier.
Okay. But everything's good now? It's leveled out now?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, my connection looks pretty solid. How's yours?
My connection?
Bottom left corner of Discord. You don't have to guess.
Oh, Discord.
Yeah. I don't care how your internet is.
I don't see what
it says. Video connected right over your image and your name above.
Oh,
it.
Oh, I see.
Is
it's
it
full
green?
Bars. It's green. Yeah, it's green.
Hover over it. What, how many milliseconds? Hover over the three bars.
29 milliseconds.
Ooh, okay, it's not great.
Yeah, I've been noticing Blessing's a little delayed in terms of like responding. So
he's got the mic in front of his mouth, so it's one of those things that like it doesn't look like his audio is delayed. You know.
Story number one, what the fuck is happening at Ubisoft? This morning, you know, I guess as this is happening also, as I'm doing this, we actually have six stories because Greg is adding breaking news because something is happening. I don't know what's happening, but something big is happening. But we're going to start off with this Ubisoft story because it's huge. This morning, Jason Schreier over at Bloomberg broke essentially more details on what we've kind of known has been going on at Ubisoft, because over the last month and a half, we've been getting stories about essentially the culture over there at Ubisoft and things that have not been good happening over there. We got a full breakdown from Jason Schreier at Bloomberg, but I'm actually going to pull from Stephen T. Wright at GameSpot, because the Bloomberg story is very detailed, very long, and I don't have time to read that all on the show. And so GameSpot had a pretty good condensed version of the story. And so this is Stephen T. Wright right here. Over the past month, Ubisoft has been embroiled in one of the largest scandals in industry history, with more than a dozen ex-employees alleging that the video game publisher is a haven of misogyny and sexual harassment. Now, Bloomberg News has published a lengthy report that reveals new details about the ingrained culture of toxicity at many of Ubisoft's studios, allegedly enabled by executives that prioritized family connections over complaints of misconduct. One of the most upsetting anecdotes comes early in the piece in the company's Paris headquarters during a presentation of an important game led by a woman who was out of the room at the time. Chief Creative Officer Serge Hasquet pulled up a YouTube video of a French song that describes sexually explicit acts with a woman with the same name as the presenter, pausing it when she came back into the room. Hasquet has since been removed from his position. A racist anecdote from the publisher's Bulgarian office describes multiple staff members calling the Black Star Wars actor John Boyega, quote, a monkey. This culture of sexism seeped into the publisher's games. The report focuses on how it affected the Assassin's Creed series, stating that scripts were changed in development to focus on more male characters, particularly in Syndicate and Origins. According to the piece, Syndicate was supposed to feature the twins Jacob and Evie equally, though Jacob ultimately ended up with much more screen time. Origins' male hero, Bayek, was set to be injured or killed early in the game, and players would assume control of his wife, Aya, but that changed over the course of development. The latest change in the series, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, originally only allowed players to control Cassandra, a woman. However, when members of the publisher's male-dominated editorial team said that a female protagonist wouldn't sell, players were ultimately given the choice of Cassandra or her brother, Alexios. In recent weeks, a number of employees have left Ubisoft in the wake of similar allegations, including a marketing manager and several executives named in the report. The creative director of the upcoming Assassin's Creed Valhalla also stepped down following accusations of infidelity. Imran, again, these are details that essentially, you know, broaden what we've known already about Ubisoft and about what's going on there. How do you react to essentially these new details regarding how that's now fed into their games and how that's changed things like protagonists?
I'm going to go ahead and file this into the I'm incredibly not shocked folder, because honestly, you can see this in a lot of Ubisoft games over the years. I remember specifically one of my first interviews at GI was talking to Ashraf Ismail about representation in Aya and stuff like that, and he confirmed to me in the interview, Aya is playable in this game. I remember writing that up in a preview. Then Ubisoft PR flipped the fuck out and it was like, no, this was never said, we never said Aya is playable, remove this from the preview. So we ended up having to remove it from online and take it out of the magazine like at the last second. Then the game came out and Aya was playable. So I've always kind of wondered in the back of my head, I was like, I wonder if they're doing that because they don't want people to know or think the game is more girly than it is because there's a female playable character. And reading this, like, all that clicked together, like, yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds kind of like why they did that. There was that whole confusion in Odyssey with, like, I kept asking them, like, who is the canon character of Odyssey? They're like, well, honestly, it's maybe both, but I'm like, all the merchandise has Cassandra, so why is the game, like, split? Like, we want players to have a choice, and the same thing kind of going with Ivor these days as well. Looking at all this stuff, saying it's actually affecting game decisions, again, not shocked. It seemed like anyone who's paying attention to Ubisoft over the last couple of years already probably kind of figured that.
Yeah, this is all unfortunate, especially given how discussions have evolved over the years in regards to, I mean, entertainment in general, but video games. You know, like I remember the last generation where there was a graphic or like a meme that was floating around essentially of like a bunch of different cover arts of games from last gen, or like action games in particular from last gen, and it's like just a sea of like, you know, white male faces, right?
Yeah.
And
bald with a beard.
Yeah, like all like the same haircut, and it's one of those things where it's like, all right, why is this the case? Like, why do we have a bunch of characters that look the same, that sound the same? You know, what is it about video games where we can't get a little bit more diversity in there? And a big part of it is things like this, right? Like the idea that women aren't going to be able to sell a game if you have a woman on the cover. You know, I remember that being a conversation around Last of Us Part One, where I believe like they actually had a fight to get Ellie a prominent spot on the cover for that game, because there were worries that like okay, well, you know, is she going to be able to sell this game that's supposed to be this, you know, hardcore action horror game? Like, why not have Joel be the person on the cover? Those are conversations that have been happening forever, and yeah, like this is just another symptom of that kind of overall issue that there is. And I'm once again, like we've talked about this already, but you know, I'm glad to see the editorial team at Ubisoft get restructured and Serge let go, and see that now there's probably hope for things to get better in regards to Ubisoft, in regards to more of a wide scope in how they approach making their games and putting out their games, and you know, idealizing what characters are going to be the main character versus a side character or a playable character, all these things. Like there's so much that needs to be done and needs to be pushed. And yeah, like again, like I'm happy that it seems like we're seeing some change. But that said, you know, all the stuff in this report is terrible. Especially with like, I mean, one, the characters being scrapped for the reasons they were scrapped, but also, yeah, like the other things that are going on within the studios, right? Like the John Boyega monkey thing, like that's terrible. That's fucked up. You know, that the woman lead, you know, being disrespected in that way, like again, a bunch of fucked up stuff that, like, it's ridiculous. Like it's ridiculous.
I will say Sony does a fantastic job of like kind of forcing you to play as a female character. Just like, this is the story you want to tell. It's a female character. Fucking deal with it. And then those games sell really well. So I don't understand Ubisoft's apprehension, because like some of the best selling single player narrative games this generation have been like Horizon and Last of Us, stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
It's so strange that publishers still cling to that old world mentality. Like Don't Nod, I think they had a story that when they were shopping around Remember Me, they're like, okay, we'll do this. Publishers would say, we'll do this, but it has to be a male character. We can't have a female one. And Don't Nod said no. And so eventually Capcom was the only one who said yes, because Capcom kind of has like a bunch of games with female-led narrative games. So it's not shocking that they love, like, they are okay with that kind of thing. I don't understand why Ubisoft is stuck in that old mentality, because like, what are they basing that on? Like, Beyond Good and Evil? That didn't sell because the main character was not female. It didn't sell because it was like a Zelda like with cartoony graphics, and that wasn't a big thing at the time. Now I think it would do a lot better, but yeah, well, I don't understand why Ubisoft's culture evolved or devolved to this point, honestly.
I mean, I think it's primarily people at the top, right? Like, it's primarily people that have that creative power that are the ones enforcing these decisions, you know, in these kind of narrow mindsets. And I mean, a big part of that is, you know, like you mentioned, right? Like, you know, what is with this old school mentality? And I think that is because you have old school people at the top. Like, you have these, again, like, you know, old white men that have been doing this forever that might have established that thought process in the early 2000s and just never grew with the culture and never saw, you know, where things went culturally and how people would become way more open in terms of different types of video games and different types of protagonists and different types of characters, and just stayed with that same mindset but still having that same control, which has now led to where we're at now, where we can't get an Assassin's Creed with a sole female protagonist, you know?
I mean, like, taking out of video games for a second, this is kind of exactly what happened with Marvel for a very long time. Of the reason we're getting Black Widow movies and Black Panther movies and stuff like that now is because Perlmutter is not involved in the movies anymore. And that was the thing that supposedly, this goes on like secondhand reports, but supposedly he was very vocal about how women don't sell and minorities don't sell. So he would veto any attempts to go beyond the white male protagonist. I feel like that same idea is obviously pervading video games still. You mentioned I saw in chat they mentioned Yves Guillemot. I feel like things aren't going to change that much with Yves Guillemot at top, because obviously if these things were happening, he was aware and he was signing off. So is it going to be that different, or is he just solely listening to the editorial team and has no input of his own?
And I think that's the thing we'll start to see and learn as things progress, because, you know, I think it could be either or, right? Like, I do think the amount and this is all like just from reading and seeing what we're given, right? But like, it seems like the editorial team had a lot of power, or has a lot of power, in terms of deciding the direction. I don't know how much of that falls on Yves. Like, the amount of, I've always looked at Yves as like a business guy, as opposed to like anybody that has any creative input. And so, like, again, I think it's a thing to see, you know, and I don't know. We'll see. Spencer Marie, writes in to patreon.com since kind of funny games, just like you can, and says, Jason Schreier dropped another explosive statement about misconduct allegations at Ubisoft. While the details of the abuse are horrible, the parts of the article that stuck out to me were how this culture was deeply affecting creative choices at the company, especially with Assassin's Creed teams. It feels very insidious seeing how women characters were continually diminished. It feels like Ubisoft kind of played us all, doing the bare minimum to include women while still holding to a culture that demeans them. Going forward, is it going to be enough that Ubisoft gives you just a choice to play as a woman?
I mean, after this story, no. After this story, they're going to have to put a couple of female-led games out there. And I kind of see their reasoning to an extent, that these games cost a lot of money to make and they don't want to take a risk, but that risk is dumb. That actually is no risk. Male players will play a game with female protagonists. It's just no one cares that much. The people that do care wouldn't buy the game in the first place. So just fuck them. Just do whatever and just make the game you want to make. That has always been the thing to me, is that whenever I criticize a game for, like, let's say social reasons on Twitter, somebody will come up and say, developers should make the game they want to make. And it doesn't actually work out that way, because they're not making the game they want to make. They're making the game they think those pieces of shit want to play. And if they keep doing that, then we're just going to get the same kinds of games over and over from a company that's already a little rote these days. So let the developers make those kinds of games, if only so it pushes the conversation a bit forward.
Yes. And to your point of developers should make the kind of games they want to make, like, this story is kind of a whole story about how developers didn't get to make a game they wanted to make, right? Like, when you look at how these important creative decisions for their game ended up having to be filtered through to the top and ended up getting rejected, right? For reasons that seem to be closed-minded and shitty. And so, like, I'm with that idea of let developers make the game they want to make. But yeah, it seems like that's not happening. And to Spencer's question here, right? Like, is it going to be enough that Ubisoft gives you just a choice to play as a woman? I don't think that's enough for any developer, right? And this is for me as a black dude who plays video games, right? Like, when I go into a game, and I have a character that looks like me or that I see myself in, right, as a black character, I don't necessarily want that to be the end-all be-all, right? Like, I don't want the end-all be-all for a character to be a woman, or for a character to be black, or for a character to be gay or trans or whatever that identity may be. I also want that representation to be done well. And so there are plenty of games where you play as women, but the women are badly written because those women were written by, let's say, an all-male team, right? Or there wasn't the amount of TLC there to allow for that character to feel like a full-fledged character. Like, I had this, like, small, like, very small critique with The Last of Us Part 2, because there's a prominent black character in that game that, like, kind of comes and goes and doesn't get, in my opinion, didn't get the love that they deserved in terms of where their story went. And, like, I think including a woman as, like, a main character is legit the bare minimum. Like, you have to write those characters well, right? Like, you have to write women well. You have to write different marginalized folks well. And so I think for me, that's the goal. Like, that's the bar you have to set and that you have to hit.
Yeah, and representation matters, honestly. Like, I grew up with the only brown characters I knew about were, like, Dal Sim. And obviously that's not a good representational thing for, like, a child growing up in America that doesn't quite know what to make of their skin color, but loves video games. They don't really have a lot to go by. And obviously women are not a minority, but they are an oppressed, what's the word I'm looking for? Demographic in American society. So it is, I think, the bare minimum to start doing something about that. Even if you think, like, your game is not going to sell, you're wrong. That's just straight up the thing. You're wrong if you think that is that impacts the sales in any way. Not in 2020.
And Ron, let's make a hard transition to story number two. Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 2 has entered full development. This is from Jordan Olliman at IGN. Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 2 has entered full development, and game director Tetsuya Nomura wants to deliver the game, quote, as soon as possible. This news arrives thanks to a 15-page interview from an upcoming issue of Japanese games magazine Famitsu, details of which were posted to the Ryokutiya blog and later translated by Twitter user Itaikimochi. According to the blog source, full development has started for the second part of Final Fantasy VII Remake following the first part's release in April 2020. Itaikimochi pulled another interesting quote from the same interview, which details Nomura's intentions for the second part's release. Quote, "We know everyone wants the next installment quickly. We would also like to deliver it as soon as possible. Since we were also able to see the line of quality from the first installment, we hope to make the next installment even better in quality that can make for an even better experience. We'd like to get it out as soon as possible, so please wait for it. I think we can clearly convey the direction when we officially announce the next installment," end quote. Perhaps more interestingly, executive producer Yoshinori Kitase also explained that, quote, "The new story of Final Fantasy VII has only just begun," end quote. That contrasts a little with Kitase's previous comments when he said the original game story wasn't being drastically changed. Imran, as Final Fantasy VII fan number one, maybe number two, I don't know where you rank against Tim Geddes. I'm just going to say you're tied, right? So if you're tied for number one, how do you react to this? Do you feel like Final Fantasy VII Remake is actually somewhat imminent?
I would say so. When I read this statement and based on what they've been saying recently, my assumption is that they have a lot of already base work done on FF7 Remake Part 2 or whatever they end up calling it. But I suspect a lot of things changed once the first game sold so well. And that I think is where stuff like Nomura saying, yeah, we don't know how big the installments are going to be, like how long they will be, is it going to be more detailed or whatever. I think they know they can get away with more games now. And they probably are adjusting the volume of content on the fly a little bit. So I suspect when we do get an FF7 Remake Part 2, it is going to be mostly based on what we got in Part 1 in terms of like models and animations and voice work and stuff like that. Like things that they already have a good foundation for that they don't have to like hit the reboot button like they do every time with a Final Fantasy sequel. If I had to guess, I would say probably 2023, 2024 is where I'd look at a new game right now. And that still does feel like a very long time off, but this is a fairly still a big project. And I don't think they are too worried that the fan base will fall off between the years.
I'm still very curious on what the jump from PS4 to PS5 is going to mean. Because I think for me, when I look at a game like this, I'd assume that, okay, yeah, the next installment isn't going to take as long because you already have a framework there. You already have a combat system established. You already have character models. You already have X, Y, and Z. And, you know, now, like, the job is mainly going to be, like, you know, creating new content for almost... Again, this is going to be wrong because of how long this is going to take and because this is an entirely new game. But in my mind, I would have thought of it as like an expansion, right? Or like as like a almost like an Uncharted to Uncharted Lost Legacy type of thing, where it's like, okay, yeah, you guys have everything established. This game jumping to PS5, I feel like it's going to mean they might try and go for it more so than what we have already, right? Like I expect the game to look better. I expect the game to have better graphics. I expect maybe some ray tracing, you know, like some use of the SSD. Like, what are the technical leaps that you can have with those in place? I'm very curious on where that stuff lands and how much of a jump we could actually expect from Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 1 to Part 2.
I mean, I love FF7 Part 1, but it was a bunch of hallways. Like, there's a couple of big rooms, but honestly, it's mostly just hallways. And I imagine one of the big things that are changing for the next game is, one, they have to have open fields because they're out of Midgar. Like, you can't just teleport to Calm and then teleport to the Jacobo Ranch and teleport to, you know, Junon or whatever. You've never played FF7, so this means nothing to you. But
actually, I've now played a lot more of FF7. I'm probably like 20 hours in or so. Yeah, so I know what Calm is. Yeah, tell me about Calm.
But I mean, like, I imagine to the extent that, like, you can make a game like that open world-ish, there's going to be large fields, large open areas for that game. But I think the biggest change is going to be, you remember F7R, every 3 seconds you were, like, crawling to a thing or, like, holding triangle for 5 seconds to pull down a lever while it loaded. Mm-hmm. That'll probably all be gone. And that is, I think, one of the most exciting things about the SSD is I don't want to deal with that shit ever again. I don't want to deal with those long loading times when I die. I don't want to deal with, like, just those long door opening animations, because it does add up. I want to say, like, I put 90 hours in MF7. I would bet like an hour of that was just load times, and over time that gets really fucking annoying. So I would bet a part two, four new systems completely, assuming it is four new systems completely, who knows. But I assume that will fundamentally change the design of those kinds of things.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Story number three, Xbox Game Pass on Switch may be less likely than we think. This is Brendan Sinclair at gamesindustry.biz. Xbox head Phil Spencer's long-stated goal to get Xbox Game Pass on every device appears to have been scaled back a bit. In an interview with GameStar published late last week, Spencer suggested that as much in a response to a question about whether the whether the company's focus on giving gamers choices meant that Game Pass would find its way to the Switch and PS5 in the future. Quote, "The thing about other gaming console platforms is we're not able to bring a full Xbox experience on those platforms," Spencer said, noting that the company has been able to bring such an experience to PC and mobile phones. Quote, "We know when somebody is playing playing one of our Xbox games, there is an expectation that I've got my Xbox Live community, I have my achievements, Game Pass is an option for me, my first-party library is completely there, and the other competitive platforms aren't really that interested in having a full Xbox experience on their hardware. But for us, we want to be where the gamers want to be, and that's the path that we're on," end quote. Microsoft has already ventured onto its competitors' platforms a number of times in the past, most notably with multi-platform releases of Minecraft and Switch releases of Cuphead and Ori and the Blind Forest. The PS4 and Switch versions of Minecraft also give players the option to use their Microsoft accounts to allow for cross-platform play and adding friends through their Xbox gamer tags. This is a conversation we had actually very recently on this show. I think it was me and Greg that was talking about it. And I think it is very much the case, and Phil Spencer pretty much like echoes this in the statement, right? That like the only barrier to Xbox Game Pass and Xbox features being on other platforms are the other platforms. Like Nintendo's going to be the biggest barrier. PlayStation's going to be the biggest barrier. Imran, do you see those walls falling away anytime soon?
So this is going to be one of those times where I talk about news openly, but like, I had heard a year or two ago that Microsoft and Nintendo were in actual talks about xCloud and Game Pass and all that on Switch. They don't... Well, who knows? I don't know if they're not in talks anymore or like this is just Spencer deflecting or whatever, but I could easily see a situation where Sony kind of balks it like, no, we're not going to let you have like your own accounts here, or Nintendo says, yeah, we want a piece of the pie, you can't not do that here. I can imagine easily that both those companies had their own agendas that stretches beyond, oh, this would be cool. I suspect Phil Spencer is also very tired of being asked about it. He's very tired of being asked about, like, hey, when's Ori and the Will of the Wisps coming to Switch? Or when, like, are you putting Halo on PS5? Or whatever, things like that. I bet he's kind of pissed off that, like, I'm sure he loves the idea of the ecosystem and people signing up for accounts and all that. But also, you want to sell a couple of boxes. You don't want to like have them sit on shelves forever. So having some incentive to buy an Xbox, probably still pretty good. I think he doesn't want, like, he would rather not talk about these things even if they are planned. So it's hard to tell what his firm plans are for these things on other consoles, but I think an ideal for him is that Game Pass is everywhere, but also people buy a ton of Xboxes, and it's very hard to marry those two ideas.
See, I see this kind of to your point that he, like, I can see the point of him being tired of being asked about it, because I think the reason he makes the statement is because people think that it's closer to happening than it is. Because I feel like there's a general idea that, one, of course, Xbox would love to get their services everywhere, but also that, like, there's a relationship there between Xbox and Nintendo that hasn't been there previously. Like, I very much vividly remember the E3 where Fortnite was announced for Switch, and then shortly after we got the commercial that was the green and the red and like the crossplay thing, right? That was like obviously like leaving out PlayStation, but was a signifier of this seeming marriage, or at the very least relationship, between Microsoft and Nintendo. And with statements and talks that we've had in the past where, yeah, seemingly the end goal or a goal for Microsoft would be to get their features onto that Nintendo platform, I'm sure those talks aren't far along. I'm sure those talks are still in the stages of, like, I'm sure they're still in, like, the flirtation stages. Like, I don't think they're ready for any sort of commitment, especially from the Nintendo side. And so I think this is Phil Spencer finally being like, all right, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Like, you know, we want this to happen, but there's a reason this is either difficult, you know, to make happen, or there's a reason why this is not happening right now. And that's because Nintendo's not ready for Xbox to have the Switch takeover, right? Like, Nintendo's not ready to have achievements on that platform. They're not ready to have, you know, usernames and all this different stuff in that platform. Like, they're ready for the PlayStation, and more so Nintendo, are ready for that in small forms. They're ready for that in terms of, all right, yeah, when you're playing Minecraft, then you can use your Xbox gamer tag, you know, or you know, when you're playing Cuphead or whatever, then you can earn, I don't even know if you can earn achievements through that, but then you can, you know, have access to these small Xbox features. But overall, from, like, a system level, there's still that trepidation that I think Nintendo has that is preventing this from happening.
And also, like this is a bit of a walk, but when Valve tried to put one of their, like, the some things onto iOS, and it became an issue with Apple, that Valve didn't want to give up their cut, and Apple said anything that you purchase on iOS has to give us a cut of the money. I could easily see that being a situation mirrored in Microsoft and Nintendo. Because let's say you have Game Pass on the Switch. If you do buy something on the Switch, or, like, do make it a decision to make a purchase, or buy more Game Pass Ultimate or something, Nintendo's going to want some of that money, because it is on their platform. Mm-hmm. But Microsoft's going to be like, well, no, why would we give you the money? This is our service. You're really not doing anything. This is entirely cloud-based. So I can imagine that situation playing out there. The way Amazon does it is, when you try to buy something on Kindle, they will just say, like, hey, no, you can't do this here. Like, in the Kindle app. Like, go to the website Amazon.com. And Amazon is big enough to do that. But is Microsoft big enough to say, hey, you can't buy something on Switch. Go to the Microsoft.com and actually buy the thing. I could see Nintendo being pissed about that. I could see Microsoft being like, our customers won't do that, but don't want to give up that, like, 15% or whatever percentage they have to give up to Nintendo to do it.
And that's the thing. That middle ground feels so impossible when we sit here and try to theorize it and try to figure out, like, all right, what is going to be that point where both companies are satisfied with what this meeting point is, right? Like, do you split that down the middle in terms of who gets the revenue on software purchases? Like, what does that look like? I'm curious to see what this evolves into, because I think xCloud on Switch would be a stroke of genius. And we've seen teases of Switch having game streaming, right, in Japan with, like, Assassin's Creed and stuff. But that's not necessarily come to fruition in a way that I feel like could be huge for them. Like, that opens up the Switch library very dynamically if xCloud and Game Pass comes to Switch in conjunction with each other.
I don't know for sure, but I'm going to assume xCloud is being based on Microsoft Server Bank, which is a server bank that rivals Amazon, which is honestly one of the biggest cloud banks in the world. So if they did want to have that streaming service thing launched in America, Microsoft's one of the only partners they could really do it with.
Yeah. We'll have to see. Story number four, this is the breaking news that Greg was typing into the doc as I was going. Rocket League is going free to play. This is from a press release. Psyonix, the San Diego video game developers, announced that Rocket League is going free to play later this summer. The free-to-play game update will be the biggest one yet, and will include major changes to the tournaments and challenge systems. It will also add cross-platform progression for players' item inventory, Rocket Pass progress, and competitive rank by linking to an Epic Games account. Rocket League will also make its debut on the Epic Games Store when it goes free-to-play. It'll be identical to the version on other platforms, and will feature cross-platform play with all Rocket League platforms. Once Rocket League goes free-to-play, anyone who already owns it on any platform, including Steam, will be able to play the game with full support for future updates and features. However, the Steam version will no longer be available to download for new players. Anyone who has played Rocket League online prior to free-to-play will also be rewarded with Legacy status, which includes all Rocket League-branded DLC released before free-to-play, established 20XX title that displays the year when the player first started playing Rocket League, 200-plus common items upgraded to legacy quality, golden cosmos boost, dicey Oro wheels, which I have no idea what that is, Huntress player banner. Additionally, players who played Rocket League before today's announcement will receive an extra item, the faded cosmos boost. These items will be awarded to players player accounts when the game goes free to play. Very exciting news. Like, I think this makes complete sense. Rocket League has had an interesting journey, because at the very start of it, when it released on PS Plus, it kind of had that, like, almost the spirit of a free-to-play game, because so many people played it as a game that was, I mean, I know PS Plus isn't free exactly, but kind of free-to-play, right? Like, so many people got into it at that first month, and it was that initial boost that it had that allowed for so many other people to be aware of it. And its success kind of, it skyrocketed in success because it released in a somewhat free way. And so I feel like this is them almost coming full circle in a way that's pretty cool.
And honestly, I think it's epic trying to apply the Fortnite logic to Rocket League. And if there's any game that you can apply Fortnite logic to, it's Rocket League. Of like, once you make it free to play, and once you let everyone play it, then everything, momentum will just carry it forward from then on out. They probably have a very good live service team that's going to make it work from then on out. I think the removal from Steam is interesting.
Yes.
So Rebecca Valentine had to remind me of this, but when they released PR last year, they implied that one, it was going to go free to play, and two, that they were going to remove it from Steam. When I think it was US Gamer questioned them on it, Epic went, no, we're not doing that. But a year later, they are actually doing it. I know people will be mad. I am positive people will be mad, but I don't think people will be mad in good faith. Because I feel like if you've had like 4 years to download Rocket League at this point,
people are going to be mad about me going to Epic Games Store, you're saying?
Yeah, being exclusive to Epic Games Store on PC.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
it's
whatever.
You've had 4 years to download at this point. It's not.
And it's free to play.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you're, like, even if you're the kind of person that hates Epic Games Store, it's not like you're giving money directly to Epic Games Store if you get the game free to play on Epic Games Store. You know, like, in a way, you're kind of, you know, you're getting back at the man by playing a free game, you know?
But yeah, it's interesting that if you already own the game, it's still fine. You're still going to get the same updates. You have a Founders Edition, all that jazz. But if you don't, I can see myself, who only played a couple of games of Rocket League on PS4 way back when it was a PS Plus game, playing more Rocket League now, because it's just now I know wherever I have friends, they can also have the same access to Rocket League that I have.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing, right? People being able to get back into Rocket League and having a way larger player base that has access to the game, and it not being a hassle to convince your friends that Rocket League is the shit, because Rocket League is dope. Yeah. So if you haven't played Rocket League, boom, there you go. There's your end. You should play it, because it's one of the best games of the generation.
It is.
Story number 5. Rap artist Logic has signed a deal with Twitch. This is from Wesley LeBlanc at IGN. Logic has signed a deal to stream exclusively on Twitch. Sir Robert Bryson Hall II, the rapper known as Logic, and in some cases Bobby Boy and Young Sinatra, has announced in an interview with The Verge that he has signed a deal with Twitch just days after announcing his retirement from rap. Logic has been streaming on Twitch for a couple of years, and in that time has amassed over 65,000 followers and more than 1.5 million views. Twitch is seemingly banking on those numbers to go up. Quote, "I'm blessed enough to have millions of fans and followers," he said. "So it is a great partnership. I'm going to bring new eyes to their service, and they're going to bring new money to my bank account. And I'm just kidding," end quote. Jokes aside, they are bringing new money to his bank account in the form of 7 figures, he said. This deal comes just days after Logic announced his retirement from rap. Imran Khan, first, are you a Logic fan?
I am aware of Logic. I've heard his music.
And of course, that music be banging, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's good music. I don't dislike Logic in any way. I just haven't sought it out.
Fair point. This is a fun story, you know, like, and for me, as somebody who is I'm going to say I'm a fan of Logic, even though I've not liked his albums for like the last 4 albums. But I do love Logic, and I think he seems like a great dude. It's been interesting following this, because I was very aware of his retirement, which I have thoughts about, because like, he teased years ago in one of his albums that he was going to retire, and then in a later album he was like, "Psych, I'm not retiring. I'm making millions more albums," or whatever. And now he is like, "Oh no, actually, I'm retiring." And the reason he said he's retiring is to go spend time with his family. And so kudos. I've had thoughts on that, but that then being followed by, "Oh yeah, by the way, I got 7 figures to stream exclusively on Twitch," is a weird. It feels like a weird alternate dimension kind of thing to happen, because it's like, all right, how do those cards get played? Like, how do we get to this point? But again, fun story.
I'm gonna make a prediction that you're about to be very mad at me. This mm-hmm. seems like a logical move.
Oh God, why would you say that? Why would you say that? How so?
It's good. It's good. It's fine. I think people who can get paid should get paid. I feel like this is tangentially related. Streaming companies paying for exclusivity is dumb. It's dumb as hell. And also, I still want to know what happened with Dr. Disrespect. I want to know what that deal was.
I also very much want to know what happened with Dr. Disrespect. I don't know how I feel about streaming companies being like paying for exclusive deals, because I feel like that's almost the same as exclusive games, right? Like, you do what you do to get the content on your platform. Like, it is, and probably the better example would be like having an exclusive show on Netflix or whatever, or like paying for an exclusive rights to air a show. True. Or whatever. Yeah. This feels similar to that in a way.
Yeah, and I imagine we're gonna see more of this, like people who usually made money touring around suddenly realizing, oh shit, we have to stay at home. So mm-hmm. now they're going to start doing things like Twitch shows and Twitch exclusivity. And if Twitch comes paying seven figures for what you would normally do on a stage, might as well do it, because you're not going to get on a stage anytime soon.
That's a very good point also that I did not even consider. Then our last story number six, ID at Xbox Summer Game Fest demo event is now live. This is Jessica Ronnell at news.xbox.com. With ID at Xbox's Summer Game Fest demo event, we'd like to bring to you, in the comfort of your own home, 70 plus fantastic game demos of unreleased Xbox games that will be available for you to play and download between July 21st and July 27th. Games will start being playable today, and we encourage you to check your Xbox dashboard as more will continue to become available throughout the week. Just remember that most of these demos are an early look at gameplay and may not represent the full game release, including the availability in each country as developers continue to update and refine their title ahead of launch. We're also excited to share the 15 newly announced games below are coming to Xbox. Those games are Ars Fabulae by Punk Notion, Back to Belt by Mauricio Felipe, Darkestville Castle by Epic Llama, Ephemeral Tale by Dawdling Dog Limited. I'm going to stop reading these developer names because they get more and more ridiculous as we go. Fractal Space, Glasside, K's in the Wild Masks, Mars Power Industries Deluxe, Pixel Skater, Seasons of the Samurai, Skycadia, Space Otter Charlie, The Ambassador, Fractured Timelines, The Dark Eye, Chains of Satnav, and then The Dark Eye... The Dark Eye Memoria.
Is that a Pokemon situation? Is it like the same game with two different things?
I hope so. That sounds like it'd be fun, right? You can get Chains of Satnav or you can get Memoria. Sounds cool.
Yeah.
Along with those titles, there's a great variety of games that'll be available to try, and of course that's over 70 games. So if you have an Xbox and you want to try out some demos, have a blast, have fun. That's happening for a week, and again tomorrow. Greg Miller is going to be streaming twitch.tv/ Kind of Funny Games tomorrow afternoon, again playing through some of the demos, having a good time, so tune in for that. Emron, this is the part of the show where usually I'd give a very bad segue and then ask you where games are coming, but before I do that, let me tell you about our sponsor. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Klarna. Thanks to Klarna for supporting Kind of Funny Games Daily. In Sweden, they don't shop, they Klarna. Klarna is a revolutionary new online shopping app from Sweden that allows you to shop thousands of online stores and pay for anything in four easy interest-free payments that make shopping smoother. With the Klarna app, you can shop anywhere online from the one app. It's easy to use and convenient to browse thousands of online stores from one convenient place. You can pay for anything in four interest-free payments. Paying after delivery allows you to try before you buy, and you can also report returns directly in the app. You can also get the best deals with customized price drop alerts on items you've saved to your wish list. It's always good to shop smarter and save money. Tim loves how easy it is to find what you're looking for and get set up. Klarna is a smoother, friendlier, Swedisher way to shop online. It's the one-stop shopping app for browsing and buying anything online, all in one app, and allows you to pay for anything in four easy, interest-free payments. Download the Klarna app today. That's Klarna, Swedish for shopping. Imran, I'm really excited to see what the future of video game demos are and to see whether or not PlayStation and Nintendo decide to have their own big old summer game showcase. But that future is so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to mom and drop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is set listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Do 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 do, yeah. Out today, we got Panzer Paladin for Switch and PC, Liquid Sunshine for Xbox One, PC, and Mac, Rock of Ages 3, Make and Break for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, Stadia, and PC, Rainswept for PS4, The Laundry for PC, Kyo, that's K-H-I-O for PC, Nerve for PC, Golftopia for PC, One Piece Pirate Warriors 4 DLC Character Pack 1 is now available, and then Wargaming and WWE are proud to announce Update 5.0, SummerSlam Season 1. This partnership, and this is one that like Greg added as I'm going, and so I have no idea what I'm about to read, and so I don't know what game this is, but we're about to find out.
I'm reading ahead, and wow.
So let me start that over again, because I want to know where this adventure goes. Wargaming and WWE are proud to announce Update 5.0, SummerSlam Season 1. This partnership will bring the greatest WWE legends to the massive world of tanks battles on Xbox One and PS4. That's awesome. The following WWE superstars are now available as premium collector's tanks for World of Tank on console. Andre the Giant, Sergeant Slaughter, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Becky Lynch, The Undertaker. Update 5.0 also brings the highly demanded cross-play functionality between Xbox One and PS4 and the return of popular Commander Mode for the World of Tanks console. Wow.
Here's a question I've been thinking about. Do you think The Undertaker is the only real-life person to be in that many video games?
Ooh, I like this question.
We'd have to actually like sit down and count it up and like compare it. But I feel like yes, because he's been in games since the NES era.
That's a really good question. I can't think of somebody who would rival The Undertaker in terms of games appearances, aside from like, I was going to say like sports, like Michael Jordan or something. But like, again, like WWE games come out yearly. Like,
yeah.
And also Michael Jordan retired. I mean, Undertaker retired, but he's probably also still
been. Because I still see him and shit. I don't like.
Oh, he lost to WrestleMania against like Shawn Michaels, I think, because it was like a. No, wait. Am I thinking of Ric Flair?
He lost twice in WrestleMania, I believe.
Who did he lose to first? Because that was the one where he retired, right? Was it John Cena?
I mean, he hasn't actually retired. Definitely not John Cena. No, it was Brock Lesnar and one other person. Brock Lesnar was the second one. Who was the first? Brock Lesnar was the first one. Who was the second one?
Okay.
And Roman Reigns. Oh, God.
Roman Reigns? Yeah. Oh, interesting. But I thought maybe I'm getting this mixed up with Ric Flair. Because Ric Flair was the one who fought Shawn Michaels in his final match. And Shawn Michaels did the thing where he looked up at Ric Flair and was like, I'm sorry. And then gave him the speech and music.
Really cool.
Oh, chills. Yeah.
And then they fucked it up with, what's his face? Not the first one. The second. Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns. Like, oh, they fucked it up?
Yeah. He was going to do the tombstone. It was really sad. Look at these tanks.
I don't have it pulled up. Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Amazing.
Is it amazing, though? Or is it one of those things where it's like, I don't know that this needed to be made.
I appreciate when things are stupid, and this is real stupid.
This certainly is.
But I like in a way I can appreciate. Continuing on the wrestling train, though, this morning I was watching, I was on TikTok as I usually am, and somebody essentially posted on TikTok a match from, I think it was like forever ago, but it was Royal Rumble, and it came down to Batista and John Cena, and some folks probably remember this well because this was like a crazy, like it was a botch. But basically, Batista was going for the powerbomb. And I know people who don't watch wrestling or don't give a fuck about wrestling are like, why are we still talking about wrestling? But I'm talking about this because this is huge, right? Batista was about to give John Cena the powerbomb, but lost balance, and they both went over the rope at the same time. Oh, where's my phone?
I'm sorry. I was listening. It's just the chat was blowing up. My bad.
Okay. Greg, if you want to call me again, sorry, I keep my phone off during the show because I'm professional.
You're a professional. You know? Yeah, can you finish the story, though, Bless?
Yeah, so they both go over the ring and they hit the ground at the same time, and it was one of those things where it's like, all right, obviously that wasn't supposed to happen, but then what happened was the referees from SmackDown started being like, oh, Batista won, and then the referees from Raw were like, no, it's John Cena, and they started like raising their hands to like to show that they won, and then they both got into the ring because they're gonna like restart the thing, and then out of nowhere Vince McMahon like starts storming down the ramp to like make his way toward the ring, and as he slides into the ring, he like tears what's the muscle that's like in your upper leg, like his hamstrings or whatever, like he tears essentially both of them at the same time and has to like fake like everything's okay. Greg Miller's calling me,
which is really impressive. Real impressive that he just kept going.
Greg Miller, how's it going?
How can you make it worse? How do you make it worse? All right, you're over here totally wrong about The Undertaker, and then while I'm trying to fucking call you, you fuck up the Vince McMahon story, too.
did I fuck it up?
Your goddamn mouth. Yeah, it was his quads, not his
quads. Come on.
Don't worry.
Oh, everybody knows it. Everybody. Come on, what's up with The Undertaker stuff? So he lost to Brock Lesnar.
Don't even worry about any of that stuff, because, no, The Undertaker, like, technically, maybe is retired now, because they did this whole thing called Undertaker The Last Ride, which was this multi-part documentary that in June just ended. And on that one, he was finally like, it basically chronicles, and I'll give you my login information so you can watch it, because it's really good, but it basically chronicles all the times he tried to retire and then just like couldn't get it out of his system and kept coming back and kept coming back and kept coming back. And so this one ends with him finally being in a place where he's like, I think I can actually leave it. So like it's kind of like he's retired now. You know what I mean?
So
like,
do you
this
think
this just happened?
I have two questions for you. One, are you gonna play that World of Tanks thing? Because it looks pretty fun. and then two, do you think Undertaker has been in more games than any other character?
Yeah, this real is a life great question you guys had. I like this one a real lot, and I do think. Yeah, I know what you meant. I've been watching the show. You've been killing it. Yeah, I it's got to be close, right? Because you could toss anybody in there, but even like Hogan's taken years off, obviously, and then obviously when he went to be full-blown racist, they could cut him out for a while. So, like, right there, Undertaker's got the lead on him. But then Undertaker's still in everything all the time, and there are the multiple things. I think it's that, and I like how you brought up Michael Jordan, but then again, you know, he retires, and then there's these years where it's not, whereas there's a WWE game at least every year, let alone mobile stuff, let alone whatever. I think Undertaker's got a really good shot at it.
I'm curious. I'm going to do the research after the episode.
All right, cool. Thank
you. All right, thanks for calling.
God, he sucks, you know?
I don't know who it could be aside from The Undertaker. This is like a very good question that I think we're, again, just like the whole are we going to restart 2021 thing. I want us to go our separate ways. I want us to do our research, figure out how we feel, and then the next time we're all on a show together, I want us all to figure this out, right?
This should be an extra life segment. Is
even
us figuring out.
Even you, Kevin. I almost called you Greg. Even
I
you, know, Kevin.
I noticed. It hurt a lot.
I apologize. Also out today, EA and BioWare have announced that Star Wars The Old Republic, the popular Star Wars MMORPG, is now available to download for free on Steam. New dates, Risk of Rain 2 will complete its Steam Early Access and officially launch on August 11th, and then Samurai Jack Battle Through Time will be released on August 21st, 2020 for PS4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and on Windows PC. Imran, are you into Samurai Jack?
I like that show. I did not like the ending that when they brought it back for Adult Swim. I thought that ending was real dumb. But I like that show overall. I don't know that I want to play another samurai game right now.
But it's like different though.
Yeah, it's different. It's very different. Come on.
Yeah,
question.
Yeah, I saw it, but
Do you think it's worth rewatching? Because I got like four episodes into the original show. And I was like, I like this. I might rewatch the whole thing.
Samurai Jack is so good. I started rewatching it a few years ago on Hulu. It's not on Hulu anymore, which hurts my heart because I want to finish it. But that show holds up.
Also, it's so I didn't realize it ended when it got rebooted. Like, ended.
You gotta actual ending that, if you don't like time travel paradoxes, is real stupid.
I love time travel paradoxes.
Okay, if you like not like going... It's one of those things of this doesn't make any sense, but
I'm a bootstrap man, you know what I mean? I just finished watching Dark. That show is fucked up.
So I don't know anything about the ending of Samurai Jack, and so these are not spoilers. This is me speculating. And if I'm right about this, Imran, don't tell me that I'm right, because I hope this isn't the case. Because you saying that you're not a fan of time travel paradoxes is giving me the energy that, like, is Samurai Jack going to end up actually being Aku? Is that where this is
going?
It's not quite into a thing that, like, if this happened, it should have happened immediately and not waited like 2 years to actually happen. You will notice it immediately, and how you feel about it is going to differ from person to person. For me, I was like, what the fuck? That doesn't make any sense.
So I ask you if you're a Samurai Jack person, mainly because me and Greg have this fantasy draft that we do for PS Love You, where we draft games based on how well we think they're going to review on Open Critic. And I'm looking at the Samurai Jack game, and I'm like, this doesn't look like it's going to be bad, honestly. Like, it's giving me vibes of it could be okay.
It looked fine when I saw the trailer a couple of months ago. But I think, like, it just looks fine. Not like anything. It's not one of those games I would go out of my way to pursue playing.
Sure, I can see that. Right now I'm sitting in a place of, do I think it's going to be higher than a 70? Because that's my bar now. My bar is like anything that I think can exceed a 70 is what I'm going for.
Passing grade.
Yeah, passing grade. And so I'm eyeing that game. Hopefully Greg stop watching after the whole WWE chat, because I don't need him to intervene. Imran, this is where usually we'd get into reader mail, and people would write in, let us know what we got, or not what we got wrong, because that's later. But essentially, let us know their questions, do all that good stuff. We had questions written during the show, and we're running late on this show, and so we don't have time to do a separate reader mail segment, but we're going to get into some of your questions during that post show. And then usually we transition to squad up, but we don't have a squad up today, and so we're going directly to your wrong, where you let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Jordan D writes in with a you're wrong from yesterday's show. He said, this is a you're wrong from yesterday's show, but I couldn't let it go. Yesterday, Blessing started the show with saying how he got a bagel and began listing what was on it. His full quote was, bagel, egg, cheese, bacon. Now, Blessing, as you grew up in Illinois, Seattle, and now SF, I'll let it slide. But as a New Yorker, I need to correct your nomenclature. That sandwich would be called a bacon, egg, and cheese on a bagel. If you start with bagel, people assume you mean with cream cheese. And the order for egg sandwiches always goes meat, egg, and cheese. Thank you, and hope you enjoy this hole in the morning, even if it doesn't make it to the show.
These are some arbitrary-ass rules that this guy's putting down. I'm going to say it.
I started reading it thinking that I had accidentally said something offensive, and then when I got to where it was, I was like, oh, thank God.
I like the idea that bacon, egg, cheese, is it like, if you put it in the right order, it's just a secret slur.
Also, I had a bagel this morning, one of them lock bagels. I don't think the order matters of what I'm describing. There was cream cheese in it, but there was also salmon and onions. God, it was good.
Let's see. Some folks are writing with breaking stuff that I'll look into, and maybe we'll talk about tomorrow. More context on some things. Let's see. Peter MC89 says Undertaker won against AJ Styles at this year's WrestleMania, but he had a documentary this year, and this is what Greg was talking about. Ill Grill Chill says muscles in front of your legs are your quadriceps. Listen, I am not a physicist. I don't think that's it either.
I think you're trying to say physical therapist or something.
Physiologist.
Maybe that's what I was trying to say. I don't know, man. I'm ending the show because I'm tired. Tomorrow's hosts are as follows. Get ready for this. Greg and Andrea Renee. That's right. The busiest lady in the business is making her return to the show. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com. This is Kind of Funny Games. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.